You're listening to Inside iOS Dev, show about real-world iOS development, today with you, your host, Alex Bush. And today I have a very special guest, Leo Dion. How's it going, Leo?
Good. How are you, Alex?
Pretty good. Sunny morning here in California. Where you are?
It's actually not too bad. I haven't had the heat on in the house for like the last week. It's sunny. It's in the 50s. I can't complain. So
you're in Michigan, right?
Yes, exactly. I'm in Michigan, and it's not been too bad weather-wise here.
Right, summer finally.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Spring. Let's just say a cold spring.
So Leo and I we met online quite a while ago, but then we met again in person at MicroConf a few weeks ago, and we were chatting about all things Swift, iOS, and server-side Swift, and Vapor topic came up. But before I go into that, could you give us an intro? I know you have you're currently running your Bright Digit consultancy. But before you worked at IDV Solutions, then I think State of what was it?
The state. I worked for the state.
Oh, you worked for the state.
State
oh,
government. Okay. Yeah.
And then
that was a while ago.
And then before then, for Corecom Internet Services, right?
Yeah. So my first job in college was working for an internet service provider. I helped the elderly get their Outlook set up for email. It was very exciting. But it was good, like, especially in 99, getting that like tech experience at that age and just getting my foot in the door. And then, worked for state government for about a year and I couldn't take it. Mm-hmm. Wonderful people there, but it was not a good fit for me. And then I worked at IDV Solutions for about 5.5 years, a wonderful company. And then got my first taste of building an app for the iPad there. And then from there, started my own business about 5.5 years ago with Bright Digit and have been focusing more and more on development. I like to say Swift development in the Apple space. I don't like saying just iOS development, even though that's probably about 60-80% of what I do. I like to branch out more. I've done Mac work. I have an interest in doing Apple Watch development. I don't know if I'm, just like the punishment of having to deal with Xcode and the Apple Watch, but I do think it's an interesting device to develop for. And then recently I started to say, okay, let's see what it would be like to use Swift on the back end. And did a little bit with Kitura and then jumped onto Vapor, which has kind of been really interesting and fun to work with.
So I guess give us maybe an overview of what Vapor is and why sort of you picked it over Kitura ultimately.
Yeah. Well, Kitura is really nice, but I feel like it's built for the enterprise, and that makes complete sense because it's by the folks at IBM, and that's IBM's big target. It's really good at a lot of the concerns that enterprise has, like monitoring systems and, uptime and things like that. Whereas Vapor, for me, as somebody who's developed with like Node.js, it definitely has more of that let's get up and get going as quickly as possible. And that's what really turned me on to Vapor, is I had a lot of the tools that for developers that I found really easy to work with. So Vapor is a framework for running a server-side application on Linux, specifically Ubuntu, or on the Mac right now. And so you have everything from connecting to a database to routing URLs to dealing with all sorts of various things that you need when you want to get a server-side app running working on Vapor. I really, really liked it. I really liked working with it. It was really easy to work with and get up and running. If I was going to choose server-side and I was going to choose Swift, and we can get into why I would even choose server-side Swift over other services, but I definitely would go with Vapor at this point.
Actually, yeah, let's start with that there, with why would you pick Swift over something else? There is, I don't know, Ruby out there, right? God forbid, Node.js, things like that.
Oh, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. Yeah, so, like, I'm a big... I don't really like to get like ideological about it and be like, oh, you should definitely go server side Swift. I don't think that's a healthy way for any IT team to pick a backend. I actually did a whole episode on how to choose a backend for iOS development on my my podcast, Empower Apps. Mm-hmm. And like my whole thing is don't radically change what's already working, and also go with what's comfortable for your team. So in a sense, I think like the short of it is go with Vapor if your team is very comfortable with Swift development and is already deep into Swift development. I would highly consider Vapor or any Swift framework for server side development, but specifically Vapor if you want to get up and running really quick. And you need a server. You can't just rely on CloudKit for your backend.
Right.
And the only other case I would say where you might want to consider jumping onto Vapor besides that is if you're running an outdated server that's just a pain to deal with, then you might want to consider Vapor as a choice if you're already considering jumping onto something new. Yeah, does that make sense?
It does, because that's what I've heard a few times from different teams, that they, roughly speaking, the reason they picked Swift, server-side Swift, and let's say Vapor, or actually other server-side Swift tech in particular, because they sort of leveraged existing skills. They said, oh, we already have, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 iOS devs, right, that are working on iOS apps, and they already know Swift. Why don't, instead of hiring new people and bringing in new people with new skill sets, right, why don't we just leverage what we have? And to a degree, it works. But I wonder, from my personal experience, I've been building the Ruby on Rails APIs quite a lot back in the day for iOS apps. And I know it's a completely different beast in a way, building a backend app versus iOS app, right? What are those things that sort of iOS devs don't know but will have to learn, even though it's still Swift, building backend apps?
I completely agree. Like, I'm still surprised at how many iOS developers aren't aware of developing on the server. And I guess it does kind of make sense, but I think it's healthy to be aware of where that data is coming from when you're building a mobile app. Yeah, I mean, the big thing is just like URL routing, being aware of what a healthy REST API or GraphQL, if you want to go with GraphQL, works, how to structure your calls, how to structure your database. To me, like, that's what makes a healthy server-side app working, because that's kind of your bread and butter, and then getting into like authentication, caching, and stuff like that. That's really what a lot of front-end developers, I'll say, aren't aware of, that goes into building a good back-end. Mm-hmm. For an application.
So what are those sort of parts? Like, just to reiterate, right? So you said you need a server. That would be the thing that routes requests, come in. And let's assume we're talking about building an API app for an iOS application, right?
Yeah, yep. Just
for simplicity's sake, and I would assume that would be most of the cases for kind of Vapor usage, right?
Yes. Yeah. And yeah, so you want to, like, hopefully you have some background knowledge on SQL and relational databases. Mm-hmm. And then picking a database, typically you'll want to pick something like Postgres or MySQL or Maria. Those are the biggest of the SQL databases for open source use. And then you can then use those. If you're really skittish about wanting to do a SQL database, then if you have to, you can go with Mongo. But I have my reservations about getting too far away from a relational database in a lot of ways. So yeah, that's where your data is going to be stored on the back end. And then you start thinking about, okay, relationships, children, and many to many, one to many. I mean, then you get into like basic database.
Right. All the tables and joins and queries, right?
Right, right. So that's your database. And then you have your front, the URL routing, right? So, okay, what are the objects you're going to be showing in a table view, or what are the things you're going to show in a collection? And how are those going to be viewed? How do you need to collect that data from that database and output it through the URL? And then what's really nice about Vapor is, since it uses a lot of those Swift paradigms, you could stick with like still codable type stuff that's easily serializable and deserializable. And then, you know, keeping that format in a JSON format that's robust and easy to use, both for the server and the client.
Yeah, actually, I was wondering about that. So, because I don't have any production Vapor experience myself. So does that promise of code sharing at least a little bit holds up?
I think it can. Like, I think with a lot of the ways you can do like extensions in Swift, you probably can share a lot of that code in a healthy manner. I haven't gotten around to doing that specifically, but as somebody who's played around with code sharing between Mac, iOS, and Watch, I think it's possible. In the same cases as like where you might build an app for both the Mac and the iOS, there are ways to, like, without getting into the whole elephant in the room with Marzipan, like, there's still ways to, like, do things like, okay, well, one thing is called NS color, the other thing is called UI color. We'll just create a type alias. Like, there's simple stuff like that you can do. Or, for instance, you could set up, make a struct or class that has the minimal amount of code, and then apply extensions, and then target those extensions depending on, okay, this piece is for iOS and this piece is for Vapor. Just like you would, say, do an extension for iOS or an extension for Mac, but still keep some of that code, shared code, separated, and keeping your code organized in that fashion.
I see. Makes sense. Okay, so let's take a step back a little and talk about Vapor as a whole. Maybe what is it? Bird's eye view. So it's a framework, right, for server side development. What is it? Is there a design pattern it sort of conforms to or wants you to use when you develop with Vapor, or it's a free for all, whatever you implement goes?
They have kind of what they term as like services that you apply to. So you'll have like a service for your routing, you'll have a service for authentication, a service for your database. So that's one pattern that you see a lot of. The big thing that you'll see is it uses Swift Neo, which practically all these web frameworks use as their kind of deep back end underlying layer. Swift Neo is an open source library by Apple that's kind of replacing a lot of the networking stuff slowly over time. We're going to be replacing some of the networking stuff that's underlining a lot of the code, and it's cross-platform. So in other words, you can use Swift Neo on the back end and iOS, on the Mac, whatever. And Swift Neo has this really cool way of dealing with asynchronous programming. And we see this in a lot of language, but the idea of like promises and futures. And that is a big part of what you end up running into when you're developing for Vapor, because you'll have a call that is asynchronous, but then it'll also call the database, which is also asynchronous. And rather than getting into like the sort of closure hell,
right,
that we've all seen, they have a lot more of a healthier pattern to dealing with that, with this idea of futures and promises and maps and flat maps and things like this that make your code a lot cleaner, a lot more efficient.
Yeah, that was sort of a startling contrast, and I think it was introduced in Vapor 3 specifically.
Yes.
When I was researching on Vapor, it was a while ago, it was Vapor 2. It was a bit different. It was more closer to Rails or Cake PHP. I believe that's where originally the framework takes inspiration from. More imperative, right? Things, roughly speaking, the controller gets called when a request is issued, and then there is a method that's executed, and that's where you do all of your business logic, and then you send back the response, right? So very imperative, line by line, but with this Swift Neo, as you mentioned, it's more of a asynchronous based, right? So promises, the concept of promises is the, the front fork, right?
Right, you got it. So that makes it a lot nicer, especially when you're doing like SQL queries, and then also like the SQL queries. So my previous experience was working at IDV at a .NET shop like that, and I was introduced to like C# Link, where you can do kind of these map reduce stuff in code, and it'll automatically translate it to SQL. And we get a little bit of that with the Fluent ORM that Vapor uses. And that's what I've been playing around with, is their ORM, because then it'll create the tables, but also create the queries automatically based on your Swift code and run it on the database. And that's a really great way to keep your code maintainable. We could all be like real wizards at SQL, but at the end of the day, if the code's not maintainable, especially with SQL code, it can be a pain in the neck to maintain over the long run.
Right. Is it so the impression I've got when I was digging through Vapor 2 docs is that it was still a predominantly MVC framework, like Model V Controller, just like Cake PHP or Rails. Is that still the case, or did they shift it as you mentioned towards more services sort of pattern and asynchronicity built in?
Yeah, it seems like it's definitely shifted that way with Vapor 3, where they use much more of the asynchronous patterns to do stuff.
What are the major components? Let's say you build you just bootstrap an app, right? And let's say you have things to persist. So you have your database, Postgres, let's say, and then you want to be serving some iOS app with like API responses, right? JSON responses. So what are the moving parts there? What it would take sort of vertically to implement using Vapor?
Well,
and I'm talking more nitty-gritty, like, oh, this type of object here that does this, this type of object there that does that.
That makes sense. Maybe I can get into like the nitty-gritty of setting up a Vapor app and how that works.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so Vapor, you can install that using Homebrew. And what it comes with is essentially a command line tool with a template. And Vapor luckily uses the Swift package manager for maintaining dependencies and things like that. And then from there, you'd add different dependencies that you'd use, like let's say Fluent ORM for doing your database stuff, and then maybe the specific plugin for Postgres. And then to set up your different objects, you would create a class that uses like a model, you typically depending on what database, if it's SQLite or Postgres or whatever, some sort of model subclass.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a subclass. I don't think it's a protocol. But that would provide all the necessary things for that object to be used both in a request but also in a response as well. And then if you need to create like special custom responses or special custom requests, you can do that. And then for instance, you want to do authentication, then you just add the dependency for that authentication. And the way I've been developing is I'll then use the Vapor command line tool to take my code and create an Xcode project. And pretty much all of the work I do through the Xcode project. and then it will automatically be able to be built using the Vapor app, which doesn't use Xcode. I use more Xcode for testing purposes, but you don't really need Xcode to compile an app. It's more out of the convenience of the fact that it has some bells and whistles that developers like to use. So, yeah. And then, so that's kind of the idea behind like taking that data and being able to make it usable as a request or a response, but also being able to use that as a model. You could do all sorts of stuff with like migration. So you can set up a table and set up like specific fields, how those fields are related to other fields and other tables. So like if you want to do a many-to-many relationship or a one-to-many relationship, you can do that. And then with like routing, you can then there's an API to set up routes. And then you just basically give it a function that takes in a request type of some sort. And then from that request, you can either pull out an ID, which can then pull out a specific object in that database, or you can just go ahead and parse the URL, for instance, and there's a whole API to that. Excuse me, sorry. And then from there, you can then do your database query using Swift code to respond with whatever object. And as long as that response is and they use Codable behind the scenes, but there's a few other special protocols that they use for specific content, whether it's going to be used as a request or a response or URL parameter. But as long as whatever you have is some sort of type that can be used as a response, you can then just return that using the like as a future, I guess, would be is what you're returning, a future of that type.
Right, because everything's promised, but it makes sense.
Yep.
Okay, so let's say maybe let's talk through a sort of, well, I guess I might call it data flow of the data in a hypothetical example. Let's say you're building this Vapor API backend, and I'm working on the iOS app, right? And we have posts, for example. That's something that we users create in the iOS app, and then we would like to persist it on the backend, right? So what I would do on my end, and as just an iOS dev, right, I will code up all the UI, I'll have my, let's say, MVC, right, that does all of that, and then I collect the input from the user, and let's say it's a title of the post and content or the body of the text of the post. Then I put it all together in my post struct, right, that's a codable conformed. And then I want to send it to you, right, to the backend to process and save. So let's say, you know, without knowledge of the backend, but with some knowledge of networking, I would assume, okay, I'll come to you and say, hey, Leo, so I want to do this feature, right, to persist, I guess, the posts that users create. Yep. I would like to send, I think what I propose is an endpoint, a post HTTP endpoint to your API, and I will send you the following, I guess, JSON, right? Because that codable struct, I can just easily map to JSON, and it will look like, I don't know, curly brackets for objects, like key, user key, and then title and body in there as two strings to make it simpler.
Yep.
So where do we go from there? And then I set up, and like, I guess you would tell me, oh, Alex, here's the future URL you could use for that endpoint, and please send post requests. And then I set up my client HTTP client code to issue HTTP requests, and then send one with some data. So what happens then? On your end.
So I would take your post and I would make it like, let's say we're going to use Postgres. I would make it like a Postgres model of some sort. And then that would add an additional field of like an ID of some sort.
Wait. Before we get into the database side of it, how do you even receive that request?
Sure. So I would create like a route of some sort. Mm-hmm. I can set up like a class with a function. And then when I set up my routes in the configuration of the server, so that there's like a configuration function that you have to implement. And then there's where you add all the routes.
And the route in this case would be a specific URL, right? That your server can handle.
Right, exactly. Which is going to be something like, you know, in this case, we're just going to do a post to post. Does that make sense?
Yeah, actually, yeah, sure. That's a little bit, sure, but that works.
Right. So I'll set up like a post call. And then all I have to do is give it the function that we'll be calling when that post is made. And then that URL call or that function call will take in a basically like a request type of some sort. Mm-hmm. It can just be request if you want to just do that. And then that request type, we can then pull out who this person is, assuming we have some sort of authentication. There's a require authenticated method that will give us the user based on the URL call. If that fails, these are all try. These methods all have, you know, they can throw an error, obviously. So in that case, if that fails, it'll just throw 401, which is what we want anyways. And then based on that, we can get the ID of the user. Mm-hmm. And then we can take the request by using a sorry, I'm just reading it right now. But we can parse out the post of that data. And since we already have that as a model, because we've taken your code for your post and made it available as a Postgres model. Mm-hmm. We then create the post, and we also assign a user to it, since we have that user. And then we save it to the database, and that, of course, is an asynchronous call. And then after that, we can return to the user either just like a 202, like an OK success, or if we want to return some other metadata attached to the fact that this post is saved according to a user, we can do that too. So that's kind of the process of creating a post. Is you'll have basically a function that serves as that API call. And then as long as you are taking in the request and returning a future of some sort of response type, you're pretty much good to go.
I see. Yeah, okay. But in the scenario, I remember as I was going through the docs, in a scenario where your function sort of is not enough, just a function to handle a request, I believe you can create some sort of a controller, right, that would be providing those functions.
What you're doing is like your route will take in takes in a function. I'm going to look into this just real quick. Mm-hmm. But it's typically like a controller class. But that controller will have the function for the post, the get, a list, you know, your typical like CRUD calls.
But then when I assign CRUD, the create, update, destroy, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Thank you. So I'll have those functions in a controller, but they'll all be set up for a route. Each individual function for that controller will be set up for a route. So that's typically the way I've done it.
Right. That makes sense, yeah. I believe they have some sort of a convention/protocol thing to sort of make it all automatic if you really want to, but you could also do individually, like specify individual functions per each route. Something like that.
And I think that's kind of like the 101 way to do it is just using functions and doing it that way. But yeah, if you wanted to really keep your stuff organized, I think a healthy way to do it is basically like just setting up a controller for the CRUD methods and doing it that way.
Yeah, because I believe, for example, even in our example, right, we probably down the road, as we develop that API, we would want to have one controller for all the post requests, then another controller for all the user requests, and things like that, right?
Yep, you got it.
Cool. So we are probably about to wrap up, but what would be the best way for what would you recommend for iOS developers to kind of get going with backend development and Vapor specifically?
Yeah, well, I have a blog post on getting started with Vapor and then showing you how to get deployed on either Heroku or Ubuntu. So I'll probably provide a link to my deep dive there.
We'll add it to show notes.
Yeah, and then the Vapor docs are really great. They provide a lot of help, and they also have Discord. If you have any questions, you could reach out to folks on there as well. But yeah, Vapor is definitely one of those frameworks that are really easy to get started with, especially if you have some knowledge of server-side development.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Any selfless plugs you want to add?
Yeah, if you're into the business of developing in the Apple space, definitely want to check out my podcast, EmpowerApps.show. We'll provide a link in the notes. My business is brightdigit.com, but if you are a Swift developer, you want to check out my Learning Swift blog at learningswift.brightdigit.com, where I post about different Swift stuff on there. I think that's everything I want to plug. Thanks for having me on, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Leo. Bye.
Bye.